Criminal Pursuits, A Good Omens multivoice podfic, written by Feral Tuxedo and voiced by
Sky Asimaru
and Chop. Chapter 3, A Journey of Discovery. Every wardrobe in this godforsaken house was stuffed full of women's dresses. There were evening gowns in fine satins, tea dresses made from printed cottons, nightgowns, woolen skirts, a staggering amount of blouses with flouncy collars, and more pairs of shoes than a single person could ever need in a lifetime.
Aha!
Fell cried triumphantly, bent over a large wooden chest in one of the upstairs bedrooms. Crowley closed the door of yet another wardrobe, spilling over with petticoats, and turned around. The chest contained a stack of haphazardly folded men's shirts made from white linen. They were creased and unbearably frilly, but clean. Underneath them, there were a few pairs of tweed trousers in varying shades of brown, equally as old-fashioned. Fell's smile vanished at the sight of them.
A Seville Row this is not, but I suppose it will have to do.
Crowley rolled his eyes. He thought that after 3 days of wearing the wine-stained tuxedo, Fell would be as desperate for a change of clothes as he was. He pushed past him and rummaged through the chest, picking out the darkest pair of trousers and the least billowy of the linen shirts. Fell stopped him with a hand clasped around his elbow.
Excuse me? What gives you the right to pick first?
Crowley pulled his arm away and began to strip off his own really quite grimy shirt and trousers. His vest was disgusting, too sweat-soaked and horrible. He ripped it over his head and tossed it aside.
I've got a knife, and I'm not afraid to use it.
Fell swallowed hard as he watched, eyes flitting up and down Crowley's naked chest.
Really, my dear, you needn't keep reminding me.
Crowley thought that, if anything, he should remind Fell more often that he was in fact being kidnapped and not out on a rich boy writer's retreat in the country.
Come on, get dressed. We've got places to be today.
Oh?
Fell perked up, and Crowley didn't blame him. They'd spent the entire previous day lounging about in the opulent comfort of the library, drinking tea without milk, and eating baked beans on crackers, which was the only food Crowley had been able to scavenge from the kitchen cupboards. It hadn't been all bad. Fell had sat at the desk, click-clacking away at his novel, occasionally asking Crowley questions about getaway vehicles and literacy rates among the criminal set. Not once had he attempted to escape. And when Crowley had escorted him back up to the attic room, he'd locked Fell inside without the additional restraints of the fishing rope. This morning, there had been a new kind of camaraderie between them as they scoured the house for clean clothes. And though Crowley would never admit this to anyone, it had been fun, barging into bedrooms and ripping open closet doors. But now, there was work to do. The ransom letter had to be dispatched and food procured.
Get a move on!
He barked at Fell, who was still standing there with one of the linen shirts draped over his arm. As he should have realized by now, barking at Fell did nothing but make him more stubborn.
I wish to take a bath,
he declared, pulling himself up to his full height.
If we're going outside, I want to be presentable.
Crowley threw his hands into the air.
Nothing wrong with soap and tap water, but of course that's not good enough for Aziraphale Bloody Fell Esquire.
Fell did not look at all intimidated. If anything, he appeared to be suppressing a laugh.
I have standards. There really is no use in arguing. You're welcome to set up camp outside the bathroom, if you insist. Although...
He leaned in and wrinkled his nose.
Please don't stab me for saying so, my dear, but you could do with a soak as well.
By the time they both climbed into the Bentley, the sun was blazing down through the windshield. Crowley's stomach had been distinctly growling since about 10 o'clock. Fell, who'd proclaimed to be starving around the same time, was sitting stiffly in his seat, arms folded across his chest.
I must say, this whole endeavor seems to be very badly planned.
Huh?
Crowley blinked and refocused his attention on the road ahead. Lavender-scented air wafted over from the passenger side. It was distracting.
No food, no change of clothes, no plan as for the communication of the ransom demands. Is this your first kidnapping?
It was, and it was no good denying it. Crowley said nothing, but gripped the steering wheel harder and slammed his foot down on the gas. Fell continued, rather smugly.
I thought as much.
I am a criminal. Done burglaries, blackmail, the odd mugging, and stolen more motor cars than you can shake a stick at.
How perfectly charming. You really are a jack of all trades. Well, all trades except the one in which you're currently employed.
Crowley hissed, but there was no fire in it. All the fire had been washed away by the bath, which, though he hated to admit it, he had rather needed. The hot water and floral bath salts had cleaned off not just the dirt of the past few days, but also some of the anxiety that had clung to him since he'd first stepped foot inside Jasmine Cottage. The relaxing effect of the enormous tub had only been somewhat lessened by the sound of Aziraphale Fell, whom he'd left shackled to a chair on the other side of the door, huffing and throwing snide comments at him about the futility of tying him up again. And still, he couldn't shake the notion that his victim was, on the whole, quite enjoying himself. The look he'd given Crowley when he had finally undone the fishing rope and marched him at knife point to the car had been one of genuine gratitude.
Where are we going?
Don't know yet. Find a town that's a little way away to post the ransom note. Get food.
And razors, if you please. I don't at all care for stubble.
Fell rubbed a hand across his face. Crowley dared a quick glance over, noticing for the first time the fine gold hairs that had begun to grow on his jaw. It wasn't a bad look. Combined with the flowy linen shirt and his candy floss hair, freshly puffed up from the bath. Like a swashbuckling romantic hero of old. Crowley suspected his own ginger stubble looked a lot less debonair and rather more unkempt. It was highly unfair how the old-fashioned shirt made Fell look more like a handsome outlaw than Crowley ever could. He was too skinny for that frill, he decided. Too narrow. Fell made it work with his rounded shoulders and his gently curved chest. But then, he'd also looked sharp in the closely tailored tuxedo he'd worn the night of the abduction, before Crowley's young accomplice had soaked it in red wine.
What were you doing in Tadfield on Saturday, anyway?
Crowley asked, following that train of thought.
You don't strike me as the type to buy tickets for a community production of Shakespeare.
Fell, not at all put off by the sudden change of topic, shrugged.
Oh, goodness, no. I much prefer the West End. The Tadfield lot made a right mess of it, too. Fumbled both the jokes and the heartbreak. Dreadful production all around.
So why did you go see it? You're not from there, are you?
No, but one of my friends is. And I'm sorry to say he appears to have quite fallen in love with an enthusiastic, though entirely untalented, amateur actor. He dragged us all along to show off his new beau. Pretty enough boy, though nowhere near as charming as the Claudio he attempted to portray.
Right.
Crowley's thoughts kept spinning back to that evening, and the letter that had detailed exactly where he would find Aziraphale Fell.
Those friends you were with that night,
he began again, unsure of how to finish the question.
What do you think they did when you didn't return from the bathroom?
Fell laughed and ran a hand through his hair, fluffing it up even more. He had very expressive hands, Crowley noted.
I expect they weren't particularly worried about my sudden absence. They'll suspect me of having gone home with the bartender.
Why would they assume that?
Because during the interval, I declared my every intention of going home with the bartender. I like to think he was interested, too, but alas, I shall never know for certain.
Right.
His throat had gone all dry and tight. He tried to remember the bartender. Surely he'd walked past him on his way to the bathroom, with the fishing rope tucked away inside a pocket. But if he had, he didn't remember the look of him. Nice, probably. Fancy. Bow tie and a sleek jacket to fit right in with the polished silver and crystal tumblers.
Why are you asking me all these questions? Surely this cannot be relevant with regards to the ransom.
Your friends. Do you think any of them might wish you harm?
Fell chuckled, hands coming down to rest on the top of his thighs.
Of course not. What a preposterous idea. Why would you suggest such a thing?
Because I've got reason to believe that one of them wrote to me.
To you? But surely you don't know any of my friends. I'd be very surprised indeed if you ran in the same circles.
Crowley shook his head.
Someone knew you'd be at the theatre in Tadfield that night, and that someone wrote to me, suggesting you as a perfect target for a kidnapping, telling me to bring you here, and sending me 50 quid for my troubles.
For a long few seconds, the only sound in the car was the roaring of the motor as the Bentley rolled along the country road.
I don't believe you.
Crowley drew out the letter from his pocket.
Got the proof right here.
Let me see.
Nah. So, know anyone who might wish you harm?
I don't have enemies, Crowley. I'm not that sort of man. And anyway, if I did, they'd surely go down the path of blackmail above anything else. Why bother with the whole kidnapping business when a few well-timed photographs... But that's neither here nor there.
You trust your friends?
To the ends of the earth.
What about family?
Fell didn't respond right away. His hands knotted together so tightly, one could be mistaken in thinking Crowley had bound them again. His response was slow, hesitant.
They're not the most loving, I'll grant you that, but I cannot imagine any of them wanting me hurt. Well, Gabriel, perhaps, but he's...
Not Gabriel. Letters written in a woman's hand.
How can you be so sure?
Spent enough time in my life looking at anonymous letters.
Ah, for blackmailing purposes?
Yep.
I must make a note of that.
Fell patted the pockets of his borrowed trousers, as if there might be a secret notepad tucked away in there.
Got any sisters?
The hesitancy returned immediately.
One, Michael.
Does she hate you?
Well, hate is such a strong word.
So she does.
We've never been close. She's the middle child, you see, and I think in some ways she resents me for the opportunities I had just by virtue of being born a son. University, and travel, and the freedom to go wherever I please, these are all things for which she envies me.
Crowley didn't point out that he, too, had been born a son, and the closest he'd gotten to university was breaking into one to steal exam papers for a particularly lazy lot of students. Fel looked out of the window, frowning.
It makes no sense whatsoever, Michael wanting my abduction. And most certainly not right now, when it's only days before her wedding. In fact, if I'm not released by Tuesday, there will be quite the talk among the guests. She won't like that at all.
Crowley could think of a myriad reason for a bride not to want Aziraphale Fell at a wedding reception, but resorting to hiring a kidnapper seemed a tad extreme.
Out of my siblings, Gabriel is the one most capable of cruelty. He's never approved of me.
What? Do you mean the novel writing?
A laugh escaped Fell, one that was harsh and bitter, and so unlike him.
My writing, my friends, the way I choose to spend my time, and the people I spend it with. Yes, all of it. My parents have always afforded me freedom, you see, out of indifference rather than affection, I should think. But Gabriel likes to accuse my father of being too soft where I'm concerned.
Fell was animated now, crossing and uncrossing his legs as he let out another cold laugh.
I don't know what gives him that impression. We were raised by the same governess, after all. Went to the same school. He simply cannot fathom my decision to willingly reject the boundaries with which he's only too happy to confine himself.
The handwriting proved nothing, after all.
Do you have any older brothers?
Fell asked, nearly pleading.
Only younger ones.
I expect they look up to you.
Crowley shrugged. He hadn't seen any of his siblings for years, and his family wasn't the letter-writing kind.
They're both in prison,
he admitted, not at all sure what had compelled him to share that. Perhaps a misguided attempt at sympathizing with Fell. Ridiculous! And still, he wanted to soothe, to show him that families weren't all that. But all he'd done was to draw Fell's pity, so obvious in the way he looked at him, thin-lipped and frowning.
I'm so sorry to hear it.
Yeah, well, they're dumb. Got caught. Liga's out in 2 years. Aster in 5.
By which time he'd already have fled the country, if everything went to plan. The rustle of paper made Crowley look down, and only then did he realize that he was clutching the anonymous letter so hard he'd crumpled it up at the corner. He pulled open the glove compartment and stuffed it inside. They reached the outskirts of a quiet market town. Tidy terraced houses with neatly kept front lawns that gradually gave way to taller, older buildings lining cobbled streets. Crowley followed the signs to the center and parked the Bentley in a deserted street just off the town square, where a row of overgrown hedges offered some amount of concealment.
I'm gonna lock you in here,
he said, bracing himself for the inevitable protest. But to his surprise, fell on his side and rolled his eyes.
Oh, I thought as much. Well, do get a wiggle on. And don't forget to get milk. I can't bear to have another cup of tea without it.
Crowley climbed out of the car, locking the door, before he made his way over to the row of shops lining the town square. He sneaked one final backwards glance at Fel, who sat in the passenger seat with his arms crossed and his eyes half closed, deep in thought. Crowley got food and milk and petrol. He got razors and soap and even picked up a tin of posh tobacco before popping into the bakery for some fresh Chelsea buns. It barely made a dent in the £50 the mysterious letter writer had left him. When he returned to the Bentley, the glove compartment was open, and Aziraphale held the anonymous letter in one hand, with the other clasped over his open mouth. Crowley groaned and unlocked the driver's side door, throwing first the shopping and then himself inside.
Spineless? How very dare! I'm not spineless!
I should have taken that with me.
Do you think I'm spineless?
Well, you've been pretty easygoing about this whole abduction business so far.
I'm dignified. And anyway, what good would it accomplish if I were to flail and scream and make myself a nuisance? Nothing at all, except perhaps my untimely death. Then there'll never be a sequel to Murder in Eden.
Crowley didn't point out that Fel had done a stellar job at making himself a nuisance even without flailing. He closed the door and started the engine. Fel was still clutching the letter, but Crowley was much too wise to try and take it from him now.
I simply cannot believe that any of my friends would write such a letter. It's perfectly horrid.
Don't recognize the hand at all.
Fel looked at it again, tracing the lines of black ink with one finger.
No, though I agree with you, it does look rather feminine. I keep thinking of who was at the theatre with me, but I would vouch for every single one of them.
All right, let's go through them then.
There's Anathema, my dearest and oldest friend, with her Newton and his friend Shadwell, a Scot, I believe, and a rather strange one. Then there were the them.
Hang on, not so fast.
Fel, who'd been counting on his fingers, paused and frowned at him.
Anathema. Weird name. What's she do?
She doesn't do anything. She simply is.
Huh?
She's an heiress, richer than the king, but many Americans are these days. She's the sun around which the rest of us circle, like planets in their orbit.
How poetic. So, she could feasibly own an enormous mansion in the countryside, filled with ball gowns and thousands of books?
She could, and she does. Two, if I'm not mistaken. One in Essex, and one in Cornwall, by the sea. I've been there enough times. And anyway, the idea of her having me abducted is absurd. She doesn't need the money.
Well, technically, whoever's written that letter isn't getting any money from this at all.
Oh?
The opposite, actually. They sent me £50 and said I could keep the ransom.
Well, that's all manners of suspect.
Wasn't it just? The more Crawley thought about it, the less sense it made.
Does she have any other reason to hate you?
No.
Felt that much too quickly.
None whatsoever.
He turned away to look out of the window, but not before Crawley had noticed the faint blush that spread across his cheeks.
Who else, then?
Well, there's her Newton.
Her Newton?
You know, her fellow.
Crowley turned to fully look at Fel and nearly steered the car off the road. The man had gone bright red and was resolutely not meeting his eye.
As much as a man can be anyone's fellow. He's very shy, but dreadfully talented. An artist, you see.
Is he poor?
Oh, very. His parents cut him off when he decided to pursue the bohemian life rather than enter the family business.
The man was decidedly not poor then. But Crawley supposed that being the fellow of an American heiress with two manor houses wasn't much of a hardship in that regard.
Who else was there at the theatre?
Crawley didn't even know why he was so keen to find out about the letter. It was nothing to him, not once he'd gotten the money and returned fair to London.
Well, there was the them. There's four. I can't even remember who gave them the stupid nickname, but they only ever go out together. Adam's the one with the unfortunate infatuation with the actor. Then there's Brian and Winsleydale.
Fell shuddered as he said the name, but Crowley couldn't tell whether he disliked the man or was simply suffering from hunger pangs. He certainly was.
And Pepper.
Crowley perked up.
A woman?
Yes, but goodness, Crowley, it wasn't her. It wasn't any of them. I'm sure of it. My friends and I, we understand each other. We have each other's backs, to use a common turn of phrase. We're all... Lord, I'm not sure if you understand, but we're all outsiders.
Crowley suppressed a snort. It was just like Aziraphale Fell and his rich, bored friends to think themselves outsiders for going to art galleries and indulging in fornication. And yet, there was something about him that resonated with Crowley. Something that was a world away from flirting with bartenders and being snobs at the theatre. A world away, even, from cold-hearted families and big dreams that might never be fulfilled. There was a connection there, and that was just bad news all around. The last thing Crowley needed was a connection with the victim of his crime. Fuck, if Tracy knew, she would rip him to shreds.
Focus on the money, love.
Or B.A.
Always knew you were weak.
But she wasn't here now. Neither of them were. It was only him and Aziraphale Fell, sharing a car with feelings that were big and confusing and so bloody distracting. Crowley dug around the shopping bags by his feet and found the one from the bakery, pulling out the Chelsea buns and handing one to Fell. He accepted it with a grateful smile and spent the rest of the drive nibbling at it, licking sugar glaze off his fingers with delighted little sighs between bites. They pulled up through the gate of Jasmine Cottage just as a curtain of clouds drew across the sun, bathing the creepy old house in muted tones of grey. Crowley turned the motor off. He had to get out and open the stable door to hide the car away, just in case someone did come by this deserted part of the country. But he sat there, as if glued to the seat. Everything was heavy and slow. Feld's voice broke through the silence.
You do realize I could have escaped if I wanted to.
Huh?
You left me alone in your car when you went to the shops.
I locked it.
The smile that had not gone away since he'd finished his Chelsea bun softened.
I might not be as nimble as you, but I expect even I would manage to wind down the window and squeeze through it if I wanted. They're rather large.
The windows! He'd left Fell in the car completely unattended and worse, unbound. Didn't even tie up his hands. One stupid mistake that could have cost him everything.
Oh, fuck!
He banged his palms against the dashboard. Fell flinched at the sound. But then he sat up straight and turned his whole body towards Crowley. And he was, once again, hit with the overwhelming desire to touch him, to close the gap and never let go again.
Don't you understand? I'm not trying to escape, Crowley. It's not freedom I want.
What is it, then? What do you want?
Fell looked at him as if it was obvious. An invitation. Crowley regretted the question, because now he'd asked it, the answer had suddenly and immovably manifested between them. Crowley searched forwards, and before he could do or say or think anything at all, Fell's mouth was pressed to his, hot and pliant and sugary sweet. He forgot to breathe, grasped at the quickly fading notion of control like air. He'd done this before. Girls liked to kiss him in cars. They liked the headiness of speed and the novelty of driving, and they liked how they looked set next to Crowley as they whisked past their jealous friends. They liked the intimacy of the shared front seat, the privacy of a hidden parking spot. And this wasn't so very different, was it? Fell, too, was soft and warm. Through the thin linen of his shirt, Crowley felt the gentle give of his waist, the heartbeat thundering just underneath his skin. He toppled forwards, pushing against the passenger door in his overwhelming need to get closer, drawing a whine from Fell's throat that made him ache. Their hips tilted and their bodies aligned, and it was all so eerily familiar to Crowley, he was certain he must have done it a million times. But then his other hand crept around Fell's neck, cradled his jaw, and it was rough with stubble which prickled against his palm. It was wrong. It was all wrong. Aziraphale Fell wasn't a girl he'd picked up at the working man's club dance, taking on a joyride in a stolen motor car. No, he was his victim. And he was a man.
No,
Crowley whispered against Fell's lips. But his fingers, not at all keen to break contact, clung to the nape of his neck a second longer. When they finally let go, when Crowley finally summoned enough strength to tear himself away, It didn't feel good at all. Grey eyes were staring at him, large and cloudy like the sky above, and just as full of the promise of thunder.
No, what?
Fel spoke quietly, but with a wariness that pricked at Crowley's heart like a knife tip.
I can't.
The words burst out of Crowley, even though his lungs were squeezed tight and empty of air.
This is wrong.
But while a storm raged inside of him, Fel only smiled again, straightening the collar of his shirt where Crowley's hand had pushed the fabric aside. He nodded once, as if they'd come to an agreement.
I see.
And with a look that had a steely kind of resolve about it, Fel opened the door, climbed out of the car, and walked away towards the house. To be continued in chapter 4.